When the tape ended, we were talking about the original power plant and the location, and the steam tunnels came together right there.
Right, and the basement is still there. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's been a big slab put over it. There's earth on it, mm-hmm. landscaping. At the turn of the century, and I read this, now don't date me as being here. At the turn of the century, they had a professor, and his last name was Myers. And I'm now recalling something I read many years ago. He read about, and he called an engine that would produce both heat and electricity. And he said, if we had such a thing, we could save some money. Now, this is around the turn of the century, not this century, mm-hmm. 1900. They carried this idea and put it into formal recommendation, and the State Board of Agriculture approved it. So they built a little plant. Prior to that, there were heating stoves in these buildings, and kerosene or some other lamps, I don't know. And they put in a small boiler, and it got a small generator with a turbine on the end of it. So they put the steam from the boiler through the turbine, turned the generator, and made power. Now that, if I remember right, was a 200 kilowatt machine. They now have well over 60,000 kW capacity. Mm-hmm. You can divide that out and it'll give you an idea how many times the demand has increased. So that became a top priority on my part to make our facilities very efficient as we built the new ones, and also to continue the cogeneration concept on this campus. Now, a power plant of that type alone will not be successful unless you have a load condition, heating and electrical and air conditioning, that provides a balanced demand, heating demand, electrical demand. Now the air conditioning utilizes both steam and electrical. And the other thing that made it very favorable here was that we were building housing on campus, and our population moved from early morning to the shower rooms and breakfast, then to the classroom, and then at night back to the housing. And so the load was spread out from early morning till close to midnight. Now, an office building downtown is in use from 8 or 8:30 till 5. Not a good load for cogeneration, because you want to keep this equipment loaded equally. If you just have a high electrical load, then you produce steam to make electrical, and the steam that goes through the turbine then has to go through a cooling tower, and you put a lot of energy in the air. Mm-hmm. Here we take that byproduct steam, the byproduct from making electrical, put it into the distribution system on campus and heat the buildings, and in the summer cool them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, it's complicated, but we pursued the expansion of that idea and obtained the facilities over much resistance, by the way, because not very many people accepted the fact that we could do it. Mm-hmm. not very many around the country had these kind of facilities, this kind of a composite load. Mm-hmm. It was designed in here. Mm-hmm. The whole campus planning was coordinated.
Mm-hmm. And this is certainly in terms of saving overall resources, it must have been.
Pardon?
It must have been important in saving coal resources or whatever was used for the firing, wasn't it?
It saved millions of dollars. The savings this year that result from having these facilities to where they are is upwards of $20 million. Now, guess how many colleges or how many departments that will support? Mm-hmm. A lot of them. If you didn't have this combination of facilities with the capability that exists, you'd have to spend it to purchase power. Mm-hmm. There isn't any alternative. People are going to have the comforts of air conditioning and lights and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't believe so, try to turn them off on them.
Or you can shut a portion of them down.
No, there's still quite a lot being wasted.
Uh-huh. What, after that older plant, where was the power plant located when you first took over?
Well, the old plant was expanded quite a few times here on the north side of the river. Mm-hmm. Right after World War II, they decided that this site was not big enough, too valuable to have a dirty old power plant on it.
Uh-huh.
And haul coal in on railroad cars. There was a bridge across the river, railroad trestle bridge. So they started a new plant on the east side of the stadium, Shaw Lane plant. And that was put in production in late 46 or 47, 1947. By the 60s, by the late 50s, we realized that we needed a bigger site than that. Now Wells Hall is either under construction. The whole area there was being committed to academic and research programs, all except the stadium, the athletic fields. So it must have been about 1955 when we started analyzing our load conditions, the demand, and did some preliminary planning on what to do to take care of the future for decades to come. It was about 1959, we're now talking a big project. And our estimates were that we would need around $8 to $10 million to build a new power plant. No one had ever asked for anything that big. Even a new library only cost $4 million. So there was a lot of resistance on this campus. Committees opposed the idea. It was didn't take the capital outlay to just go buy the power. Who cares about cost? Just buy it. So we went through some years of resistance. But finally, in the early 60s, there were special consultants hired by the state legislature, on and on. It became really a big issue statewide. And I was kind of the focal point. I was being attacked by some as being an empire builder, and all I cared about was getting a bigger staff. I could have cared less. I could go work any place I wanted to at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, in a way. But we finally got preliminary approval to go ahead and develop plans. And by 1965, we put the first boiler and generator in production at the site that's out there south of the river track. The engineering analysis and cost analysis conclusively showed that we could pay for a new generator in savings in 230 years. What bigger return can you get on money?
Right.
And the generator part, now we had to build the boiler plant anyway to heat the buildings. The generator part only was only about $1 million extra. And we could pay it off in 230 years. That sold the project finally.
Did Consumers Power oppose it, or were they?
Well, there were several
other
parties that opposed it. I, over the years, made it a point to get acquainted with people. I was active in the professional organizations. I knew people in the Consumers Power organization. I personally met with the president of the company. Showed them our numbers. I gave them a copy of our report. I told them, if you can prove to us that there's some flaws and errors in our plan design, I'll give up. If you can't, I wish you'd keep quiet and quit fighting us. And he said, okay, that's a fair deal. Mm-hmm. But it took a few years to get to that. I wouldn't want that quoted.
Oh, okay.
I have a lot of friends in that organization right today. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they helped us many a time. Mm-hmm. I remember having a big storm out here. Our power lines to the wells went down as a result of the storm, and we were running low on water. Now the storm was pretty much citywide. Consumers Power Company, which had the lines out in the farm area and provided the power, they had very high priority needs for their personnel and manpower that night. Well, I bumped into the general manager of the power company in a locker room at the club.
Oh.
I knew him personally very well. I said, Bill, we're in trouble. Oh, what's your trouble? I said, we're going to run out of water, and it's going to cause all kinds of damage in the research program. So there'll be a family of rats dying. That they've been doing tooth decay study on those rats for 11 years. Can you help us? You bet, he said. He got on the phone. They directed some men out to the farms and put the power line back in service. No, wind and rain, stormy weather. But we had that kind of cooperation, so I don't want that.
It wasn't just struggle. It wasn't just confrontation.
Right.
Okay. The power plant has your name now, isn't
right.
It dedicated? When was it dedicated to you? Do you remember?
It. We never had a formal ceremony. It was in the fall of '83. I don't remember what month. Mm-hmm. I had requested retirement for February 1984. And they were having, in the fall of '83, they were having a board meeting at Kellogg Center. And it was shortly after 11 o'clock that morning. My secretary came in. I was having a staff meeting. She said, she gave me a note, she said, they want you to come and meet with the board at noon, at lunch. And I thought, I wonder what I did wrong this time. So I went over at noon, and that's when they announced that they were naming the plant after me. It was a total surprise.
Mm-hmm. What, the plant itself, what, how would you describe it in terms of its construction, or what role did you have in either layout or anything like that?
Well, there were some major decisions regarding the type of fuel that we would use. There was a choice between coal and oil and gas. All had to be pursued. Now in the 60s, and we had a consultant to design it and plan it. It was too big a project. It's a giant machine room. Mm-hmm. Too big a project for our little staff on campus. You need people that specialize in that work and make a lifetime career out of it. Now, we tried to get a commitment on gas for that plant. A 5-year commitment. Guaranteed supply. Couldn't get it. We investigated the source of oil. It would have required semi-trucks of about 10 or more loads per day, and the road system wouldn't have handled it. Plus, it would have been much more expensive. Gas was more expensive. In the 60s, the impending shortage that appeared in the early 70s was already obvious to people in the industry that that was going to happen. I had good contact with one of the top geologists at the University of Houston, known worldwide, and he predicted that we would have oil shortages. Now, not necessarily because it isn't in the ground, but the capability to produce enough and get it to the user, and he said we're depleting our supply in this country. We're producing less than half of the oil that we burn now in this country. It's all imported. We're at the mercy of the foreign countries. So people wonder, what's all the battling about in the Mideast? That's the source of oil. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That gets beyond my... But the major decisions had to be made regarding the design of the plant. So I'd consult with the consulting engineers. We provided the inspection service, but we did the coordinating of the planning with the various parties involved. I was involved.
What were the advantages of the coal fire?
Coal at that time was $7 million a year less expensive than any other fuel that we could get, or couldn't get, even if we could get it. A big saving. And there's an abundant supply in this country. Want more?
Well, yeah.
That's enough.
Those are pretty good.
There's a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. We had to make some major investments in air cleanup devices. Now, the air that comes out of those chimneys, what you see, that plume, that's heat. That is cleaner than any air that comes out of any residential chimney down.
Exactly.
We know that to be a fact. It wasn't back in the 50s. But there's several $1 million involved in cleanup devices in that plant.
Mm-hmm. What about the coal pile? I've heard some references made to the size of the coal pile and the assets.
There is some coal dust there. Mm-hmm. But,
I don't mean that. I mean in terms of putting year-end savings or buying ahead or anything like that. Was there?
Because of the handling process, you want at least 2 months supply on hand. You have to, and you prefer 3 months because it has to be mined, and these dudes sometimes like to go on strike. You have to ship it, and you have some horrible weather between here and the mine. Sometimes the coal shipments are delayed on account of weather. There are all kinds of factors that can cause delays in shipment. So you can't depend on having it come every day as you burn it. You need a good inventory.
And are they still using the cogeneration concept? The cogeneration concept, is that still a part of the...
Very much so.
Uh-huh. How did other universities come and look at Michigan State setup after probably the energy crisis in the early 70s?
We had visitors come here from quite a few of the top 500 corporations in this country. We had visitors from many universities. We had visitors from the major organizations in Washington, D.C., science, I don't remember all the initials, but the science group, the people that divvy out the money for research around here. We had heads of those organizations. After that plant was built and in production a few years, and then as the oil embargo hit, we became so popular it was unbelievable. We had visitors almost every day, including Consumers Power Company, Detroit Edison, Ford Motor Company, General Motors, Chrysler, University of Michigan, Central Michigan. You could pick any name you want around there. They came to see us, and I had one guy assigned that knew the plant very well, and he kind of gave them a tour and explained what we were doing, and also what we had done on this campus to make it all feasible.
Mm-hmm. The advanced planning in the 50s helped a lot.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's still going on today.
Mm-hmm. People have talked a lot to the folklore of associated with the tunnels. Urban legend related to that. Can you relate some of those stories that you'd heard or that you encountered that you had to deal with, or students getting in there or reported of things happening? That's all seemed to be part of the history.
Well,
of the
infrequently someone would get in, but we had to improve our security. The doors between the end of the tunnel, where the tunnel approaches the building and joins onto the building, there's a door that had to be kept locked. Mm-hmm. There was a time when they didn't have to be locked. The manhole covers, the vaults, underground vaults, every few hundred feet in a tunnel structure that houses expansion joints. Those covers had to be locked down. And I hope that they keep them locked down because there are curious people in this world that will jeopardize their own safety to crawl into a place like that, and they can get hurt. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had a few intruders.
Mm-hmm. Not
very often.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. In terms of your working with the other presidents besides President Hanna, you worked with Dr. Wharton and Dr. Mackey and the interim presidents, Ed Hardin. Are you, any reflections on their working with them as in terms of the physical plant?
They were all very understanding. The bigger this place became, the less frequent the direct contact. A bureaucracy developed. You probably have a good feeling for that. To get to the provost is a kind of a chore for a professor. Mm-hmm. The time that they have for each area has been carved up into more areas so that there isn't much time left. And the outside contact off campus takes an increasing amount of time. So with Dr. Hanna, we were building and accommodating the great influx of students, which percentage-wise was huge compared to what we had from where we came from, required more of his time proportionally than it takes now by this president, and you won't have the time either. It's a very different organization. But I enjoyed working with any and all of them. Each one was different. Surprisingly, Hanna had an understanding, an aptitude towards facilities, more so than some others. They used to say that he could name any and all of the trees on this campus by species. Mm-hmm. Fabulous memory. And he was interested in what we were doing. So were the rest, but I guess he was a little more inclined towards that interest.
Besides the power plant, was there any, your own personal experience working even on Jennison Fieldhouse, was there any other project that you really took a great interest in and or had a special pride in its completion?
Well, I didn't single out Jennison because of a special interest. That happened to provide a few dollars a week income for me to work there, that's all.
Yeah.
These projects were all very interesting. They were all important. Mm-hmm. And now the dormitories, we started I can't think of the name. I think we had Wonders Hall under construction and another one over there. When I was asked to attend a breakfast meeting with our Vice President Phil May and Emory Foster, who was in charge of housing, the three of us would meet on occasions when we had some major decisions to make. And I was asked to attend a breakfast meeting, so we got over to Kellogg Center for this meeting. We said, what's the subject today? Phil May said, well, we need another dormitory built and completed between now and next September. Now, the day that we met was October 11th, which gave us 11 months. No site selected, no plans. So he said, impossible. We're importing help from as far away as Kansas City. As far as skilled trades, there's a shortage of help in this city. The state are building, General Motors are building, and the construction industry is just badly overloaded. So we met. He said, so I'll report that back to the president. So, okay. Meeting didn't last long. Yeah. Tuesday night, he called. He said, I want to have another meeting tomorrow morning. Okay. We went to this meeting, and he said, well, today I'm not asking you, can you or will you? Today the word is get it done. What do you need? So he said, well, we need a site, we have that. It's a wooded area south of the river, east of Shaw Dormitory, east of down in there. Load it with trees. We need a set of plans that'll be a duplication of what we're building. Just transfer a set of plans over there, adjust it to the topography, and start building. We need to start building this week. Can't wait till next week. Got to start tomorrow morning. Okay, you got it. Whatever you need, go ahead and get it done. And so we started the building. Next morning, we start cutting trees. And by weekend, we were excavating and starting to put in foundations. We moved in September, following September.
Was that McDonald?
Yes, uh-huh. McDonald Hall.
What was the
there are a lot of incidents.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting in how, you know, just 11 months, you can go from a wooded acre to...
Well, now there's... I shouldn't criticize.
Takes a little longer?
Probably taking that long to get the permits.
Oh. Oh, I see.
The paperwork was incidental.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We got a hold of an architect. They adjusted the building entrances and so forth to that site. And the foundation was going to be the same because we copied. We used the same plans that were being used at Wander's Hall,
mm-hmm.
except modified it to suit the site.
I see.
It's
interesting. I saw in the state news today they were talking about the older dorms on campus. And
That planning changed a lot because you went from what you call gang showers,
mm-hmm.
to private bathrooms or one bathroom for two rooms,
mm-hmm.
and then individual rooms for the bathroom. It was changing almost every other year, the demand and what students expected, plus the academic work and research work was changing rapidly from just plain old classroom work to mm-hmm. to a more complicated study and research. And
mm-hmm.
then we would build a mock-up. Actually,